now more than ever, people need to go within and plug into that cellular memory, plug into divine source, detach as much as possible from the matrix. Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you're listening to the Cosmic Switchboard Show. Today, my very special guests are Naomi Swan of EmbodyEnergeticEcstasy.com and Deborah Jane East from NotesFromTheUnderground.blogspot.com.au. No further introductions are necessary. Naomi Swan and Deborah Jane East are two of the key players in our field as far as healing, as far as identifying trauma-based programming issues and the like. And we have a lot of information to share today, so we're just going to dive right into it. Deborah Jane and Naomi, how are you?
I'm doing great, James.
Great, James. How are you?
I'm fine. I'm really looking forward
to the show.
It's
so good to hear your voice.
It is. It's been a while, and the time is right for us to bring up these issues, because one would think that we would have moved past this kind of medieval kind of heretical persecution going on, but it's quite the opposite, where in varying forms and varying manifestations, we're seeing more of this kind of religiosity, grandiosity, which leads to persecution and intolerance, and not only from institutions, not only from religions, but we're seeing this play out in interpersonal relationships with just the people on the street. So we wanted to address some key issues. Naomi, did you want to start off?
Well, James, I wrote that blog, Decoding the False God, Why Am I the Bad Guy? And I think, you know, just to kind of put this in a nutshell, the reason why I wrote this is because it seems like this pattern keeps showing up over and over and over. And so it's, of course, dissecting the threads in the pattern so that we can get to the bottom of it and anchor it and clear it out of our mind so it no longer plays within us or allow it to cohabitate our bodies anymore. The important thing is understanding the hell programs. And I think that we need to look at the hell programs as a spectrum to understand where we've all been mind controlled and how to stop the mind controlled. And of course, the one that the blog is talking about more than anything is the God-fearing program, when men say they want a God-fearing woman. And really, where did that come up? And I'm going to go ahead and hand this over to Deborah, because I wasn't raised in the church. I was, you know, pretty neutral with this religion aspect, but I really want her to share some of her stories, because she understands this God-fearing program as far as the woman being fearing God, because that's what she grew up in, and I think it's important that she share a little bit before we go on.
I'd be glad to. You know, I come from the Bible Belt. I come from the Bible Belt, you know, in the South, and being a social worker too, I counseled many women within the church. So this is a topic that I know quite a bit about. And I love the blog that you did, Naomi, and all the points that you brought out, because like both you and James said, this story or this problem has leaked out in so many different levels everywhere, basically in personal relationships, in churches all over the world, even over into satanic rituals that they use these same points that we're going to be going over to control people. And I really hate that, because women as a whole are very important, you know, in a lot of things that we do, especially in ufology and in the paranormal fields, because we have a voice, and a lot of these things we've lived it. I've lived some of these things that you've highlighted in your blog. And I'd like to say, first of all, there's a lot of really good, sincere people that work within the churches. I have been in churches, and they do so much to help children, to clothe and feed, and to reach out into the community. We're not saying that this is how all churches are, but this is a dominant factor. You know, if we look back in history, it's repeated itself over and over again. And unfortunately, the concepts of religions are man-made, and we see these things that are happening. They're perpetrated by people in the church, the heads, the pastors, deacons, popes. So those are the things that we'll be going over. And I think at the beginning of the blog, you have a very important thing to share about your experience with the dating field and men telling you that you must not be a God-fearing woman, and the control that they tried to exert in saying that. So just open up by telling about your experience, and then I'll be glad to bring up some more of mine that I experienced.
We usually, you know, and James, please, you know, hone in if you have anything to say with this, but since I'm not from a Christian based, they would say, am I a God-fearing woman? And I like, where is this coming from? Why did they want a God-fearing woman? So I kept asking, why would anybody want a woman that fears God? I could not wrap my mind around it. And so the weird part about it is that just kept coming into my field, and then I would make boundaries, and then they would get mad at me and punish me because I made a boundary. They would get mad. And so I thought, well, wait a minute, this guy goes along with the narcissistic personality here, because here you're making a boundary, you're being very polite, and you're saying, no, I am not this type. And then they get mad because they think that they want you to be this type, and then they want you to be oppressed, dominated, and controlled, and then go into submission because that's how they want to control you as a woman. Then I figured it out, and I'm like, oh, that's what they want. They want me to be submissive. Well, they picked the wrong gal. You know what I mean? So,
oh boy, did they. They have no idea.
You know, so that's what I figured out through this whole thing. I'm like, oh, this is why they want a God-fearing woman to control, you know, because if I can have fear and throw insecurity at you, then by God, I can throw God at you and have the double whammy, you know, to cause insecurities in the field. And then when we cause insecurities in the field, we of course know that just causes a whole other circumstance of non-beneficial energy to play out, not only within the woman and the man and then the family unit. And so it just goes on and on and on. To even think of wanting a God-fearing woman is just an insane statement, really, in my world. I mean, it just doesn't make sense. How do you feel about that, James?
I've observed this in the past. I've been around business people that operated on fundamentalist Christian principles, and the key facet within their home business life was that the woman must submit to the man. And it goes back to that Ephesians proverb 5:22-33, wives, submit yourselves unto your own husbands as unto the Lord. So it's a form of submission, but it's also the males almost taking on the role of the Lord in the household. That also goes back to, you know, medieval and ancient times. The man is a lord of the manor. He's the lord of his estate. I mean, it wasn't even too long ago that women, and we know how flawed the voting system is now, but in England and in the United States, women didn't even have the right to vote because technically they were property of the males. And so when we have this notion that the woman must be God-fearing, that notion is also attached to the male, that the male rules his household. And we see this in a number of different cultures, not just the fundamentalist Christian culture, but also in some of the more harsh Wahhabist kind of Salafist cultures in the Middle East and in the Persian Gulf, where women are, they're basically there to raise children, they're basically there to satisfy the needs of the male, and they really don't have a say in the matter. So it's all about control, and it's a double whammy, because not only are the women supposed to submit to the males and by extension God, but it's a shame-based reinforcement. Women being brought up, like the Bible Belt in the South and places like Tennessee, which has been described as the belt buckle of the Bible Belt, they have this shame-based society that they're brought into, where women are automatically looked at as inferior and have to look up to the men. The men have to make all the decisions in the family, in the home, in the business. One time this girl said to me, I couldn't believe it. She said, I was raised by my father to always do whatever men told me to do. Whoever my male partner was, I was supposed to do what he told me, and this is what my father told me. So if my partner demanded to have sex with me, I would have to submit. And she learned that from her father, right? which is very strange to me, right, because it goes against the survival instinct, the protective instinct of one's own family, to cast off one's daughter to be treated in this way in another family unit. But we also see historically that in a lot of traditional, not traditional societies, but we see this in a lot of the European societies going back many centuries, that women were seen as a burden. It's, you know, the thing to do was, as soon as the woman was of marriageable age, if that's a word, and that could be, depending on how far you go back, 9, 12, 14 years old, then the family will marry off the girl, and it's like they're unburdening themselves of a problem. Now she's your problem. And it was to the point where the families that provided the daughter to be married, they had to provide a dowry too. It wasn't just that, okay, here's our daughter for you to do whatever you wish to do with her, but we have to pay you almost, just in case things don't work out quite right, you get money out of it too, right? So, and then you look at the way the inheritance worked, where everything was inherited through the sons. Nothing could be given to the daughters. So it was another example of this hatred and this punishment being meted out to the divine feminine. It's amazing that this is still happening in the year 2017.
Well, I have to say, James, right, you hit the nail on the head when you talked about, you know, women missing out on a lot of things. A lot of religions offer, the fathers offer their daughter to the highest bidder by offering a dowry. You know, back in the old days, it was so many cows and so much of this and that and land. Well, they still do that. And a lot of the religions overseas, they still do that. They consider it a big honor. But the thing about it is, the woman has no idea who she's getting for a husband. They're usually 30 to 40 years older than her, and she is stuck in a life of abuse. What I found out, and I agree with both of you when you talk about control, is a lot of the men in these religions have a devious agenda.
Yes.
And they're using the church to hide within plain sight, to give people a false security. Because as a woman, and myself growing up in the South, most women figure if you're in a church, then it has to be all good. But we know from the past, in the cults like David Koresh, Jim Jones, these leaders that are psychopaths and have narcissistic personalities, they morph over the written word in the Bible, and they basically put their name in there. They change it from what the Bible says to what they feel is right, and they are able to manipulate the word and to convince people that what they say is true. And that's how come there's so much abuse within all of the religions.
Yeah, let me make a point there, because that's a key point. What happens is, we mentioned earlier how the males take on the role as of God, literally God in the family. So look at the multiplication factor in each one of those households that have this strict fundamentalist outlook and upbringing. Every male there becomes the God, the Lord, the manner of the house. And also, depending on their own predilections, they can interpret the word, they can interpret the Bible in any way they see fit. And no one, the children, especially the woman, are not allowed to question in any way.
I agree. I've seen that over and over and over the years, because I've tried to get into the Bible throughout my whole life, and I keep getting kicked out. And I don't know why. I tried again, and I keep getting kicked out. So I agree, because I've come across these men that I've asked, or other people, even women, I've asked about the Bible, and it's all these misinterpretations, and it's just really kind of very, very confusing out there. And so I just kind of follow my heart and kind of done my own thing. But what I find interesting is, you know, the woman that I'm talking about in the blog with Stacy, you know, what the Stacy person went through as far as here's her and her husband, you know, teaching the Sunday school class, and Stacy's feeling very safe and secure because here she is teaching this class with her lovely husband in this happy marriage, and little does she know that her husband is having an affair with her best friend. And one thing I've seen in the churches, I've seen this a lot, and it's fascinating to me. And then what I've also seen, and I also want to hear this piece, Deborah, too, when you're ready, when I get done here. So what I've seen, though, is fascinating, is they will have these affairs and they will do these things, and then they go to church and they do a communion with whoever the pastor is or whatever, and then they think they get a gel out of free card for the week. And, you know, just because they go there and say, hey, I did this, they think they're free because they confess their sin. They continue to do the same action, the same action, the same action. What I think is just really a big joke out there when I saw this in the small town that I lived in, because, you know, it was a small town, so it was very, very easy to see. There was a lot of gossip. There was a lot of stuff that went on in that town to really see. You know, it was a town of 25 churches and 25 bars and a town of 5,000 people. And so, you know, you really got to see really what happened on, you know, the smaller secular, and you know that it happens, of course, on the bigger. So, you know, Deborah, what's your take with this Stacy and, you know, what she went through, and then her husband has an affair with her, their best friend, when, in fact, she thinks that, you know, they have a really good marriage. I mean, I think it's going along with what you're saying. There's this, you know, there's this, what I call the storefront deception again. You know, here she's feeling safe. I mean, what's your take on that, on her story?
Well, I think it's what I've talked about is the false security, is we relax our minds to thinking we're in a safe environment when, in fact, we are basically cornered. We are cornered in the wolf's den, and we have no idea, because people like Stacy and lots of other women that I have counseled myself, they are taught something that is their total undoing in getting out of it. It's, they are taught not to trust their heart intelligence, but to give whoever is in control the benefit of a doubt. And I know that you speak a lot about heart intelligence, and I think it's very important, because as we've spoke about in other shows that we've done with your other blog articles, you know, the universe will show us, you know, what to do. You speak about that many times, and that has helped me. When you're within the church environment, all of this stuff is hard to see. So, for instance, my daughter, when she was in her, she was 14 or 15, she was stalked with a pedophile that was in the church. And you think, oh my gosh, what is a pedophile doing in the church? But if you think about it, they are there in a closed environment because everybody thinks that they are safe. They have access to young people, to young children. So I think because of what Stacy experienced, and because of her being in church, you know, for so long, and her having the false security, that basically all of this stuff just sneaked up on her in plain sight, and she was looking at it, but I think she had no idea that it could be so bad in behind the scenes. But, you know, James can probably speak about this. Look at within the Catholic Church. Look at all the pedophiles that are in the church, and families think that their children are safe, but that's not the factor, is it, James?
Yes, because what they've done is they've created this closed institution where everything is presented as the truth by the governing institution. And by necessity, everyone that's there in the congregation, everyone who attends these Catholic churches as churchgoers, they automatically submit their will. They automatically give away their power to this institution, which has been around for over 1,000 years now. And so,
yeah.
Even though in today's modern world, we know very much about the widespread pedophilia, because of the fear programming, because of the shame programming, which may have been imprinted karmically lifetime after lifetime with some of these people. Because one of the key proverbs that Naomi wrote in her very key article, Decoding the False God and Narcissistic, Why Am I the Bad Guy, is, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. And so it begs the question, well, who is the Holy One? Who and why do we have to have fear as the beginning of wisdom? And you look how it was applied in Stacy's case. Stacy's best friend had an affair with the pastor, Stacy's husband, and then when Stacy, when it was obvious Stacy had found out about this dynamic, Stacy was the one that was ostracized. Stacy became the bad guy, but because of the way the institution works, the way the cliques form, the way the gossip rumor mill works, it was very easy for a person in authority, i.e. the pastor, to say she is the malefactor, she's the one that turned against us, she's the one that's trying to divide and conquer us and disrupt us. And so because of the fear, the inherent fear and the submissiveness that all the church members have, they really don't have anything other than a default setting to turn against Stacy. And Stacy becomes the outcast, you see. And what we see also is that is a slippery slope, because in the past, I've studied the witch hunts, and the witch hunts lasted for centuries, and it led to the murder of millions. Some people say only 30,000 women and children, young girls, but that is a radical underestimation. I'm sure that was written by a male. It was actually in the millions, and a lot of times, the women that were accused, falsely accused of being a witch, were nothing more than women who spoke their mind, women who were not submissive, or women who held property, or women who were set to receive an inheritance, and in variations thereof. So the males would collude and say, okay, this old spinster or this older woman who has no family to protect her, she has all this property, let's call her a witch, let's burn her at the stake, and we'll divide up the spoils. That happened a lot, because what we saw with the witch hunts was this was the full extreme manifestation of the reptilian concept of human ownership and the reptilian concept of hatred and punishment meted out to the divine feminine. And it was always males, invariably males, who did the accusations. It was males who carried out the sentences. It was males that were behind it all. And these were hosty males, often with that religiosity programming, with that scrupulosity programming, where outwardly they're God-fearing, outwardly they're Christian males, but really they were using their positions of influence to enrich themselves and to give vent to that sadistic impulse within them. And so this is why to this day the Catholic Church is the way it is. It's amazing, because I've had occasion in the recent past to be around Catholics, and the level of denial when you say to them, well, what about these incessant, rampant pedophilia that's going on? I mean, it's all out in the public now, where we even have Catholic priests saying that young boys and young children the age of 7, really they're guilty if they engage in a sexual relationship with an older Catholic priest, because they not only consensually agreed to the sexual relationship, but they basically instigated it, in the words of this one reptile Catholic perp, basically blaming the victim again. But that can only come from someone from a position of authority within an institution that has embedded itself in the psyche and in the souls of countless people for millennia now.
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yes, I agree. And I think that, you know, denial is huge out there. And I've seen just some of these excuses that come out of the mind control patterns that it is pretty mind-blowing. But I think that, you know, this is why we're doing these shows, is so that we can open up stuff up even more to get to the bottom and the root of all of this insanity that on some level we've all created in very many lifetimes. And now we get to recreate into the truth. And I would just like to do that a little bit more on my blog. And when I was writing it, this proverb, again, I don't know the Bible, this landed in something I was in on my email or something. You know, I'm just like, where did this come from? And I'm like, oh, it goes in the blog with this God-fearing program. And then I started reading it. And really, you know, when you look at the proverb and pervert, you know, they go really hand in hand, because the God-fearing program is what creates the pervert.
Yes.
Because the pervert is what becomes, you know, oppressed within himself, and then the grandiosity happens, and then within the grandiosity, then the justification happens, and then the pedophile happens, you know, that, you know, and it's just this vicious circle that goes around and around and around, you know, or or let's just say if it doesn't even go as deep as that, then it can still go to the false god programs of, you know, the Superman, you know, let me save you program. So it's all these different perversions out there that really are, that causes the insanity and really the sickness and the infestation that we're all watching right now coming, you know, really up in front of our eyes. And so I believe that's what's going on too with a lot of this, bringing the denial up so that this is no longer, you know, the elephant in the room, and that we can all unplug from it and allow it to no longer drive us. Because it doesn't matter if I'm not in the Bible this lifetime or not, I was in the Bible in another lifetime. So this very program is giving everybody an energy transmission to unplug.
When I mentioned I had occasion to be around Catholics, I had attended a Catholic wedding, and this was not too long after Easter. Now, think about the whole concept of the crucifix, where you have Jesus eternally tormented on the cross. It's not a cross, it's a crucifix, which was created first by the Carthaginians as a way of torturing people and making the torture last for days on end until they finally succumb. One of the things that happens when people are crucified is they suffer an embolism and they basically drown in their own fluids in their lungs because of the way they're positioned, and they can't adjust themselves, right? So they basically drown in their own fluids amongst other tortures. And so what the Catholics have done, and this is truly satanic, is Easter is supposed to be about the resurrection of Jesus Christ, but what they've done by affixing him onto the crucifix, and this could be a handheld crucifix, it could be a crucifix worn around the neck, or it could be a large crucifix that you see in a church. What it's doing, and pay attention, Catholics, it's denying the resurrection, all right? Because that's one of the main tenets of that religion. And the Christian religion in general is the resurrection of Jesus. But by putting Jesus on the cross, on the crucifix, what they're saying is you're going to see Jesus in eternal torment forever. Forget about the resurrection. That ain't going to happen. This is just going to be Jesus in eternal torment. And the underlying message is, this is what's going to happen to you, the believers, right? Because it's all fear-based. It's all about imposing this fear. How it filters down to the pastors, the ministers, the Catholic priests in extremists. We see, again, we saw this with the witch hunts, where because they feel they have this God-given power and they're speaking on behalf of God and they're the arbiters of God's rulings and God's laws.
Wow.
Ego activation, the grandiosity, and the perversity, because one of the facets of the religiosity is the dogmatism, the OCD thought loops, the mantras that are said over and over and over. Right? And so all of those things.
Wow, that's fascinating.
Well, yes. And also, it's a lineage thing. People are born and bred to be priests.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
So there's a bloodline hybridization aspect that goes back to the ancient priesthoods, the reptilian priesthoods going back countless millennia. So what you have then is these pastors and these priests that have a godlike authority, where in the past, and still to this day in places around the world, they have the authority to order the execution of people. They have the authority to determine who gets married to who. And it's a very godlike power. It's intoxicating. And they have the godlike power to take life. They have the godlike power to abuse the innocent and to rape and defile young children without any risk of consequences. Right? I mean, look at a guy like Father Junipero Serra. When I grew up in Daly City, California, you looked up on the hill and there was a big cross, right? Because that was right by, you know, Father Junipero Serra High School, I think it was, right? And who was Father Junipero Serra? He was a Spanish priest, and for his kicks, he would molest young Indian girls. And then, in order to expiate himself of his sins, he would have one of his underlings tie him to a post, and he would be whipped, okay? So what we're talking about is a guy who's a full-on Draco hybrid who assaults little Indian girls, and in order to relieve himself of the sin, but really it's the pain-pleasure thing, right, going on.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
He has his underlings whip him to the point where he's bloody. And we see this also in some of the Catholic, extreme Catholic manifestations, like in the Philippines, where in the days leading up to Easter, again, denying the resurrection, these people, they nail themselves on the crosses and they carry him around through villages where, you know, the streets are lined with people and they got blood and they got a hat of thorns and the whole bit, and they're literally stigmatized with nails driven through their hands and whatnot. And it's all self-flagellation. It's all narcissistic self-indulgence. The entities working through them feed off this. An energy is created, right?
Right.
And everyone that's watching it, anyone that's part of that energy field, they get swept up in it. And it's a yearly thing in the Philippines where they do this.
Wow, I didn't know that. Wow.
That is incredible.
Well, right. I mean, it is incredible. And I think, you know, it's where they use God as a weapon.
Yes.
And I think that is, you know, even in like Stacy's case too, and, you know, just in that other scenario, when you put that together, that was also kind of a weapon, making her the bad guy. And so what that does to the intellect and to the person is they learn not to trust God, because God now becomes this unsafe punishment. And then we walk around in this, you know, insecure world, just being ready to punishment, and we can't trust anything because God is weaponry out there. You know, that's what the whole mind program is.
And it's very arbitrary and it's very selective the way the punishments are meted out, because clearly Stacy's husband was the bad guy. He completely
right.
violated the trust. I mean, think of who was it, Jimmy Swaggart crying on TV, I deceived you, my people, I deceived you, right? When he was exposed as you know, visiting all these prostitutes and everything, if I'm thinking of the same televangelist. Well, Stacy's husband, in order to deflect any criticism to himself, because he has the power and authority, he deflects it on Stacy. And because of the herd mentality,
right.
all the fear, you know, this witch hunt kind of mentality ensues, and she's ostracized. And when we see something that's a similar dynamic, too. Okay, you're in Utah, so, Naomi, so you have the Mormon church there, right? It's very selective. Like, one of the basic tenets of the Mormon church is that this angel, quote-unquote, Moroni, the way Moroni is described, this big white salamander-looking being with wings, gee, that sounds like a white Draco to me, okay?
Right.
But that's just me. And so that is the messenger. That is the God of the Mormons, right? And so
right.
it's in their basic tenets that this non-human intelligence life form had given these tablets or whatever to the founders of the Joseph Smith, the founder of modern-day Mormonism. And yet, a friend of mine in San Diego, California, she was a Mormon. She went to a Mormon church. She had frequent alien encounters. She was one of those people that had frequent alien encounters, not the cyclical, the ETs come back every 2 or 3, 4 years. No, they were around all the time. And so they persecuted her when she made the mistake of saying, well, you know, pastor or whatever they call the ministers in the Mormon church, this has been what's going on with me. Again, very selective, very arbitrary. Forget about the white Draco that had formed basically Mormonism. No, no. Throw all that all out the window. This woman that comes to them and is seeking support and comfort because she's having ET experiences, she becomes the bad guy. She's the one that consorted with like evil and brought all this upon herself, and she should never
right.
bring it up with anybody, right? So it's very selective and it's very arbitrary.
Right.
Well, I'll have
right.
to say that Naomi and James, both of you have unmasked a lot of key points. Naomi, when you were talking about how they will blame the victim, they will blame the children for enticing them. You know, they did it, they wanted it. And James, when you were talking about, you know, how they use things, you know, just to hide in plain sight, you know, because they have the authority. I'll give you an example. I'll take this a little bit further. This is how a pedophile cloaked himself within the church. This is how he did it. The first thing that I remember about him was that he started handing out candy to all the little kids in the church, to the point where they would just flock to him. He was like the Pied Piper. And he always smiled, and he was the first to say amen and shake everybody's hand and offered to help. He was a modicum of what, quote, quote, a Christian was supposed to be. And then he took it a step further. He started grooming, although at the time we didn't realize what it was. He would say, I'm going to pick out some of the kids that work the hardest to memorize their Bible verses, and I'm going to take them school shopping. And he said, I don't have any children. I'll take a couple $100 and I will buy them school clothes and whatever they need. And everybody thought, wow, isn't that so cool? He's going to take money out of his own pocket. Well, I remember one of the deacons going, we'll call him Bill, going up to Bill and saying, well, you know, we've got a lot of kids in the church. You know, that might make some of them feel left out. And Bill said, well, I'm doing what the Bible says. I'm giving to those less fortunate than me. How can you criticize me? Mm. And so the deacon said, oh, yeah, you're right. You're right. I'm sorry. This is a good thing. So that's how he masked what he was doing. And it turned out the reason that he wanted to do it, he wanted to take these children out individually by themselves and get these young girls to try on clothes. And this is what he tried to get my daughter to do. He picked my daughter. She was, I think, 10. And first of all, we said, no, we don't let our daughter go anywhere without us. And so that really rained on his parade. But so we went along. And he wasn't thwarted, though, by that. Later that evening, you know, my husband, not knowing that what he was, we invited him to a cookout. Well, what happened, everybody was talking and eating and all the kids were playing. And he was there playing ball with the kids and they started playing tag. And then all of a sudden, you know, we had other people there. We were talking and I heard my daughter holler, Mom, Mom. And so I ran into the house and Bill had chased my daughter to her bed and was holding her down on the bed.
Jeez. Mm.
Yes. And so I, first of all, yelled and I said, get off of my daughter. I mean, it just had happened. It probably happened maybe 10 seconds earlier. So he hadn't done anything, but he had her pinned down on the bed. And if she hadn't have screamed out, what might he have done? Well, needless to say, he was shown the door in a not very nice fashion. And so we started inquiring after that and talking with former members of other churches and found out this was his pedophile agenda to get within the church, to use the rules of the church to mask what he was doing, to stalk out his prey, and to try to get away with it. So that's important for women to realize just because they're in the church doesn't mean they are who they say they are.
Right, right. Wow, that's pretty deep how he just created that setup to do exactly what, you know, the Drax would want him to do, to steal from the innocence of children, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And it shows his complete lack of self-control because there's a bunch of adults right outside and he's doing this, right? That's like right. This entity is totally in control of his body. Had he succeeded, and I'm sure he, you know, I hate to say it, but chances are he probably had succeeded with other children over the years.
He did.
Yeah, what he would have done immediately is you will not tell anyone, you know, you're going to be punished, you know, harm is going to come to you. And then it was blaming the victim where the fear, the shame, and the guilt, that's the normal tenets that are preached in the religion anyway, they're reinforced. Now the kid has got double mixed messages, if that makes sense, where you know,
you're right.
He's already full of shame. He's already full of guilt. He's already full of the religiosity. Now he or she has been violated, but a double whammy. If he tells anyone, he's going to be the one in trouble, right? That's
right.
So
and
devious.
It's devious. And one of the things he told the children in the other church that he abused when they complained about him fondling them, he said, if you tell anybody, I'll never help another child in the church, and they'll do without. They'll have no clothes. They'll have no food. He used guilt. He used guilt
yes.
to make these innocent children, yes, and fear. He used that to control them, like Naomi was talking about.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and it goes along with sin to me, which I really never bought either when I heard that, you know, you're a sinner, and they would tell these little kids they were sinners, and I was just like, huh? How come people say they're little sinners? And so sin just manufactures, you know, the code of low self-esteem. And then what I see with the low self-esteem, you know, that goes along with what this man was doing on so many levels is making them the sinner on some level. So now they grow up feeling like they're the sinner. And then the judgment comes in of self and others. So they judge self, and then they actually project it on the other person. And really the judgment is, and then the projection is just, you know, more energy, right? Accumulated energy within the judgment. And so when all this starts happening, that's what creates all this quantum entanglement. It just becomes one big giant, you know, fire out there of, you know, really hell, if you will. You know, because all this stuff is going, well, you did it, you did it, you did it. Because as long as, you know, we can blame it on somebody else, which is the narcissistic pattern, then we're not the bad guy, because it goes back again to the authoritarian figure that James is talking about. And so I think, you know, associating these hell programs and how they operate and how they work will give us more grounding power and more anchoring power, so that we can open up our heart intelligence and understand that this is a program and we're not buying it anymore. And I think that that's one of the key things. And, you know, and I'm just going to go on to kind of what, you know, Steve, when I took holographic kinetics, he talking about praying for people. And I, you know, he just said, you know, it's not really that thing, really not the thing to do. And I kind of understood it, but I didn't understand it. And, you know, and I've been kind of looking at my own circumstance of praying and really what it was. And then I've been listening to, you know, all you know, all these false light and these chakras, and, you know, and I'm not really sure. I think the chakra systems is just a, you know, a recorded pattern of our assimilation, and, you know, it can go, you know, either go positive or negative, right, depending on what we do. So that's kind of the way I look at it. So I don't give it such a lot of substance, but what I see, though, within this pray, it can turn to pray, P-R-E-Y, depending on what chakra, quote, system we're praying from. So if we're praying from a fear-based mentality, then that becomes pray. We become pray then, because we are praying. We're praying for some source, you know, to take care of us, hold us, help us in fear. And so then what happens is we just gave consent to the Drax to come into and intervene, yes, and do whatever we're going to do. And I think that is something that needs to be seen out there, you know, instead of the holding space, which is totally the opposite. Holding space is just allowing grace to intervene and anchoring the energy for the highest good. Why, this prey just makes another, you know, quantum physic mess again, depending on where the people are, because everybody's in their own entanglements. You know what I mean?
Oh, yes, I think so. I know a young woman that was a friend of mine, actually a family member, was in the church, and she was stalked by an associate pastor. And it wasn't really, in the beginning, it wasn't recognized, you know, once again, the false security. Here he was, an associate pastor, preaching, you know, every other Sunday and doing things like that. This young lady thought because he was in the church that he was okay. But the reality was he had a 15-page criminal history for stalking women. And the regular pastor of the church thought because that this man went up and asked forgiveness for stalking all those women that he was okay. And he neglected to tell the young woman about his past history. So if we don't learn this, if women in church and men are used as well in churches sometimes, if we don't learn this and how to take back that control away from them, we'll continue to be victims, and that's no way to live your life. And that's why we need to do these shows.
And the thing about that, Deborah, is that when these people, and you know, I mean, let's face it, it's very patriarchal. I mean, how many female ministers out there, besides that one woman who's making a pile of money and, you know, on TV, a televangelist, I mean, how many of them are there? But what they do is they use the institution and they use the office they're in, whether it's a pastor, minister, Catholic priest, whatever the title is, and there's this assumption that they've already washed away their sins. And even the terminology they use, you know, I'm cleansed in the blood of Christ, I'm washed in the blood of Christ, it's so satanic and it's so cannibalistic, right? I've eaten of the, you know, the flesh of Christ. And the whole concept of an anointing, the anointing goes back to ancient Egypt, where they scooped out the fat from inside of crocodiles and then rubbed it on the tops of initiates' heads. I mean, that's pretty reptilian, if you ask me. And
and
it goes back to the Middle Ages, too, where the whole concept of indulgences, which applied really to, once again, lords of estates, wealthy barons, what have you, if they did something wrong, like murder somebody or molest a child or something, all they had to do was pay an indulgence, which was basically like a large donation to the church, which the church would turn around and use to like build cathedrals or line the pockets of the priest or whatever. So it was a get out of jail free card, right? So it went from the rich people saying, okay, I may have done this, I may have done that, but I'm paying my indulgence now. And so it's wiping the slate clean. See how arbitrary and selective and inherently narcissistic and selfish that is. I've done my part. And so by paying you, the church, I no longer have any sins. I no longer have to answer for the consequences of my actions. And you fast forward to today. You have these people in these positions of power, and imagine the inherent narcissism and arrogance it would take for many of these people to even want to be a priest. This assumption that I can be the spokesman for God, I can presume to bestow all this religious, spiritual information to all these people who are, by dint of the nature of the institution, are inherently inferior to me, right? And so by this priest saying, well, you know, I confess my sins. Well, who did he confess his sins to? Another pedophile priest? You know, he confessed it alone in a dark room to himself and his Draco God. Who did he do this to, right? And so it's this whole washing away of the sins in the name of Christ. And I've seen this before where they used to call it, and they still do, I suppose, this holier-than-thou attitude, where they adopt this superior, highfalutin mentality and attitude towards others because they're seen as being a church-going person, a God-fearing person, living their life by the holy book, and then they have all these obedient, pretty much mind-controlled children and obedient, submissive wife by their side. Within the confines of that institution and that society, they're looked upon as a pillar. But behind the facade, as we pointed out earlier with Stacy, we have all this weird and legal, illegal, and blatantly wrong stuff going on. But they can wave the magic wand at any time and say, you know, cleansed by Christ. I've, you know, asked for forgiveness of my sins. Reset, right? No one else can do this. And look at the shell game that the Catholics do, where they just move these priests from one place to another. They don't even go through
the
pretense.
They rotate them.
They rotate them. They don't even go through the pretense of saying, well, you know, he's a bad guy. We slapped him on the wrist.
They're protected.
No,
they're protected within the church.
Because that's the nature, the predatory nature of, and that's why the church is as rich as it is, too, the Catholic Church. So in the time we got left, Naomi and Deborah in the first half, because the subject matter is manufacturing hell programs, and to the listeners, it's a very specific title, because hell is this place created by the church. Now, to be sure, there are these lower nether dimensions, okay? We're not, you know, disputing that. But what they've done is, through the concept of original sin, and again, it's very selective, these priests who are pointing out everyone else is being sinners, they act as if they didn't come into this world through the result of a sexual union between their parents. It's somehow they slip through the cracks and they're clean, you know. They don't have original sin. And so the Manufacturing the Hell program is all about bringing hell on earth, inculcating that mindset to all the people that go to the congregations, all the people that get into the orbit of these churchgoers, right? And so in the time we got left in the first half, do either of you want to comment on that?
I have just one quick comment. This is really nothing new, because even Jesus said, men praise me with their lips and not their heart.
Yes.
Meaning anybody can say anything. They can make up any crap, but in their heart, there's no true repentance.
Naomi?
You know, I think with this first hour, I mean, I'm looking forward to going to the next hour with some, you know, other codes that we can look at and go deeper into these codes to unravel a lot of this infestation. And I think that understanding to, with me and what we've all talked about, the different analogies has given me, I mean, from not being even a church-going person, I can basically feel in my system, you know, past lives unraveling. So I just want to thank both of you for this opportunity to clear this out of my system.
I'm looking forward to the second hour as well.
Yeah, so am I. Ladies, would you want to give the listeners your website information, how they can contact you?
You can contact me on Facebook at Naomi Swan with an E on the end of Naomi. And my website is embodyenergeticecstasy.com. And I'm there and I provide energy services, seeing this energy to unravel and clear it out of people's space so that they are no longer dragging it around with them, causing hell in their world, basically. Go ahead, Deborah.
Well, you can reach me on Facebook as Deborah Jane East, and my blog is notesfromtheunderground.blogspot.com. And anybody that wants to get in touch with me, I'll be glad to help. Not only talk about things like this, but also work with abductees. So feel free to contact me.
And I can personally vouch for Naomi and Deborah. They are dear to me. I always have them in my heart because I know they're coming from a heart-centered, organic source place. And they do this because they know that there are people out there that they just need a little bit of help, just need a little bit of encouragement, insight, guidance. And then the people that are going through these challenges can self-navigate on their own. And so what Naomi and Deborah are great at are helping people become leaders in their own right, helping people not to become followers, but to become reintegrated, healed, and go out there and make a difference in this world. And we are, all of us, making a difference, including you, our dear listeners. So we've reached the end of the first hour. If you like what we do, if you believe in what we do here at the Cosmic Switchboard, please go to thecosmicswitchboard.com, sign up, and become a member, and we'll see you at the top of the next hour.